Welcome to Barbara London Calling 2.0. I'm your host, Barbara London. In 1974, I founded the Video Media Program at the Museum of Modern Art, where I was a curator for 40 years. Today, with technology as ubiquitous and as fluid as water, I'm interested in how artists adapt technology to their own artistic language and vision. In season two of Barbara London Calling, I'm speaking with 12 artists from all over the world, each challenging the entrenched definitions of what art is and what it can be. Welcome to Barbara London Calling 2.0. When COVID raised its head and we went into lockdown, I needed a way to talk with the kinds of passionate people whose work and personalities have interested me for 50 years. Barbara London Calling was the answer. Today's episode marks the 13th and final episode of Barbara London Calling Season 2.0. For the Season 2 finale, I wanted to do something different. Instead of interviewing an artist, I wanted to interview another curator who could help me process the wealth of new information we've uncovered all season long. So today, I'm happy to introduce special guest Valerie Cassell Oliver, the curator of modern and contemporary art at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. I recall first meeting Valerie in Texas a good 15 years ago, when she was the impressive and collegial senior curator at the Contemporary Arts Museum, Houston. Valerie, thank you very much for joining me for season two of Barbara London Calling.
Oh, it is such a joy to be here, Barbara. And you know, I think we met each other in 2003 when we went to Poland. We were on a curatorial group that went to Poland into this. So our time together goes way back. And of course, I've known and followed and celebrated your work for so many years, having been in Chicago at the School of the Art Institute and the Video Data Bank and the connections there as well. So kind of go to the way back. It's so wonderful to have these wonderful relationships in this field that continue to grow.
I think it's all about network or colleagues, and you're certainly a very important one. So
thank you. Thank you, dear.
So to get started, I wanted to ask you something I've asked each artist across season two of Barbara London Calling. Given the ups and downs of the last 2 years and the struggles we've all faced in trying to adapt, how has technology affected you and your curatorial practice? Artists are as innovative as ever, pushing boundaries and old hierarchies as they examine the human condition. What I see is more flexibility and more mutability as ideas morph from one format to another and one technology to another. I think we've learned a lot about how artists have adapted, but how have curators adapted?
Well, I think as the artists have articulated, you know, technology really becomes a means to stay connected, to stay engaged, to continue to do the work. And I dug deep. It was in the midst of organizing my own exhibition, The Dirty South, Contemporary Art, Material Culture, and the Sonic Impulse. So that really enabled me to really dig deep and to really focus more singularly on that project. Of course, I'm a mom, and technology also enabled a certain level of connectivity to the world for my son. But in terms of what I saw in the field, I saw people connecting in ways that otherwise could not have happened. Well, maybe happened in a more intensified way and more innovative way, finding ways to reach each other, finding ways to continue to collaborate with other artists who they were already engaged in some sort of connection with, or maybe organically opportunities to connect. We saw the sort of explosion of Zooms and explosion of opportunities for people to see and to experience other people's thoughts and their sort of inner thinkings. You know, suddenly we were privy to these things, whereas oftentimes these things get workshopped in a studio, but people were making themselves very vulnerable and very raw to allow works to just sort of exist in the world and to reach more people than ever before. So I think we saw just this explosion of openness, an explosion of generosity, an explosion of experimentation. And I, even though my head was really down most of the time and continues to be that way, I've noticed that it's really opened some doors that I don't think we've quite we're not quite there at a point where we can analyze what the full totality of this has wrought for us.
In some ways, I think it's very different, but I think a lot about the early days of video when there was this new technology and it wasn't all locked into, you know, big networks. It was the personal. So I think we've seen a lot of, like you say, the personal.
Yeah, like public access TV and how the early 80s just allowed for performances and videos and a certain different level of engagement and a whole generational shift, too. I mean, it's the way this generation, the younger generation, will use this time and what's come out of it toward a different end. I mean, again, that's something that we'll have to see in the future.
So it's interesting, when we did season one last year, I asked each artist whether they consider themselves a media artist, and each one said no. I think like you, each artist uses whatever medium best suits their idea that's right there at hand, and they kind of bristled at the idea of being limited by definitions. But still, as curators, writers, we have to describe these artists and their work. So I wonder if there's anything you could say about what is the latest language and terminology you've found appearing more and more in your practice?
I don't think there was a shorthand for artists to describe themselves. I think for me personally, I put it all in there. I say they're a sculptor, they're a painter, they're a photographer. I mean, I try to present people in the multifaceted nature of how they work, you know, and I think that's probably an apt description to say that artists have increasingly, again, because there's always a cyclical nature to things, you know, artists have always been multifaceted. And there was a time in which the world demanded that they pick or choose and decide they're a painter or decide they're a photographer. But artists, I think, are always at liberty to explore and endeavor in so many different genres and disciplines. And this certainly is a moment in which we see that unabashed, you know, embrace of all the ways in which they present themselves. And so I try to honor that. I just simply call what they do what it is and, you know, allow whatever is dominant in that moment to really precede the other listings of things that they do.
So I think it's very much in keeping as what you've just said, that I think you and I, in a way, we both keep our finger on the pulse by really engaging with artists, whether that's an emerging one or an established one. And I think keeping that dialogue open with the artists, but also with colleagues like you. So I wonder, now that there's a slight reopening in the world, and it means we can go to exhibitions in limited ways, we can travel. I mean, I don't think the door is wide open in Europe, and certainly we're limited in Asia. But I wonder, how do you think the exhibition space has changed and survived in the last 2 years?
Well, I think it's become broader and it's become different in the sense that for people who are still reticent to go inside of places, people have brought what was inside outside. very much like in the 80s and 70s. They brought the art outdoors, and they've existed in interesting ways. They've brought the art onto the internet so that people can experience them in different ways. Now, of course, being a curator, I feel things are incredibly experiential, and oftentimes you have to be there, that the internet is a poor substitute for actually physically experiencing a work of art. All that said, you know, it has enabled access for people to see and engage art exhibitions and to see things when people do these sort of digital tours and allow people to experience art that way. But I think the most successful thing is individuals bringing the art to the outdoors and into the communities too, where there's space, where there's room, where there's the consistency of hunger and curiosity for things. I've just been thrilled to see that, to see people creating art in public spaces.
It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. As we've said, we've been communicating using Zoom, putting work in public spaces, expanding upon that in different ways. We've got artists working with social media, immersive environments, with everything from CGI avatars or commodifiable, non-fungible tokens. And I think it's true, ideas come first and forms are not fixed. So I'd love to know, what do you see as your passions?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. You know, it always comes back to what hides in plain sight, you know, the things that we've yet to train our eyes upon. You know, one of my favorite things to do is when I take my son to school in the morning is I walk the parameters of his school. I do it for exercise, but I do it as kind of my own meditation every morning to be in nature and to be outside and to train my eyes to see the things that I ordinarily wouldn't see if I was driving a car. And I think my work as a curator is very much about that. It's like, what is hiding in plain sight? What have we, our focus does not let us see the peripheral sometimes. And what's in the peripheral vision? You know, what's just right out of the sort of focal viewpoints? And to bring that and allow people to see things that they otherwise would not see. So I think my passion still remains quite very much that. Beyond that, I would say I don't think I discovered any new passions. I think the old passions are slowly awakening as well. And you realize what you love when you no longer have access to it sometimes. And you know, experiencing the world when you're on lockdown, I realize how much I do love to travel, how much I do like seeing people in their own spaces. Yeah, so it's been very interesting. I have seen people in their own spaces on Zoom, where you have this sort of bird's eye view into people's homes. And that's been lovely, too. You see how people live in a different way. But
I think that's beautiful, because I think there's a redefinition of what a studio visit is. So it can be the physical space and the virtual space. And it's really, like we've already been talking about, it's about the sharing of what's there, what in the head, what's in the studio. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So I'll go now into a couple of the artists who I'm very fortunate to have had wonderful conversations with over the last couple of months. And a few artists' work has stuck out in my mind. Tracy Moffat in Australia is developing an outdoor installation in an abandoned house by the side of a road, a six-hour drive from Sydney. It's a light and sound installation, a kind of memorial flame that acknowledges the Indigenous people who were there for, you know, millennia. She will try to keep the installation active until COVID disappears off the face of the earth. And to hear Tracy tell it, the installation is in the middle of nowhere. Is there anything you could add to how travel and distance is affecting how we experience art?
Well, I think I certainly will say for myself, there were moments where, you know, one can become stir crazy, especially when before the vaccine became available. And there were just times when you knew you could not be out in a general, you know, spaces with other people. It gave me more of an inclination to get in my car and get out into the world and to explore places that I ordinarily go places I ordinarily wouldn't have gone, just to kind of get out of the house and experience something, you know, to activate the senses, activate the mind, and activate the heart in doing that. And so I think people are getting in their cars and they are going to remote places. They're going places they ordinarily would not have gone to. At least early on, I think the world feels very much like it is starting, you know, sort of driving itself to try to get back to some sense of normalcy that existed before. And I don't think the rest of the world is quite ready to do that. But, you know, there are just facets of our society that just feels like full speed ahead. But I still think that people are who are still reticent to engage in that are still getting in their cars and willing to drive distances to experience something. So I think Tracy is, you know, and there's always been that. There's always been the spiral jetties of the world. There's always been the land art pieces. There's always been the works by Beverly Buchanan that have sat out into the earth, into landscape that people had to drive to experience that were remote. So there is that history of doing it. I think people are in a space where they are willing to make those pilgrimages.
That's great. So I'll move on now to Oria Harvey. She's a fascinating artist who started out as one of the very first internet artists before she turned to video games, extended reality, and most recently to NFTs. So her world building evolved out of myth and history and her continued practice as a sculptor. I'm wondering if you draw any lines between entertainment technology like video games and VR and art technology.
Well, it's all holistic. It's all modes of expression. So I don't draw the lines. I'm not a classicist in that sense. And that's, you know, one of the beautiful things when I lived and worked in Chicago, to see students really having these practices that existed, either they're painters, but they're also graphic novelists, or they are, you know, they were creating avatars so that they could exist and have a real kind of complex practice, you know, that it wasn't fixed. And so you saw that very early on, although they did it in these very sort of anonymous ways. They had avatars and personas. I think it's an extension. I think it's all creative expression, and it's all an extension of practices. And, you know, to develop mythology and then to create imagery that goes with that mythology, I mean, that's blending literature and the visual arts together. So it's all part of the expressive whole.
Well, that fits into another artist I spoke with. Lorraine O'Grady works in a range of disciplines, and that goes from performance and dance to photography, writing, and the moving image, all the while she's investigating the politics of diaspora and identity. And I was so impressed how she's the archivist of her work, and she's the one who designed her website and put it together. And I think that's just extraordinary. During COVID, she hunkered down. She was very prolific, productive. She wrote a lot, and she focused on a new performance that grew out of her installation, Looking for a Headdress, from 2015. So you've kind of already talked about it, but in your curatorial experience, are you drawn to investigate the threads that an artist revisits to untangle?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love that artists can begin to quote themselves. You know, when you know, live in the world and create and produce things and put it out in the world, you always somehow find a way to quote yourself or revisit or come back to things. And Howardena Pindell is very much like this. And a number of artists, I can say, there is a circularity to their work. There's a way in which they come back with fresh eyes. In Lorraine's case, I mean, the brilliance of this woman. She's an archivist, and I mean, she digs. So much of her work is so deeply rooted in research, and she becomes, you know, an anthropologist if she needs to be an anthropologist. She becomes, you know, all of these things that happen behind the scene that enables her to do the work. But to go back to a work, to breathe a new life into it, to revisit something and see its impact then and see where the threads, where it connects to the present now, is such a profound mode of meditation. And so I love it when it happens. And I can only imagine that Lorraine, who is now finally getting some real visibility and recognition and celebration for her work, that this would be a way in which she is honoring her practice from the days before.
Yeah, she's truly extraordinary. So I'll move on to a young artist, and that's the Danish-born Jakob Knudsen, who's engaged with virtual reality. And that's a term used to describe a form in which artists and engineers meld technology into a three-dimensionally rendered space, which then the audience is invited to enter and interact with. So the visual components of the VR universe are created through algorithms and transparency maps rather than through more conventional methods. His work always keeps one foot in the natural world. He's like a natural scientist. I'm wondering, do you look for technology-based work that seeks to recreate the natural world, or technology-based work that ventures into its own new territory?
Well, I personally don't seek it out, but I'm always in awe of artists who are doing this type of work and its ability to be translated in different forms too. You know, what you're seeing now is people recreating Van Gogh's Starry Night and allowing people to literally walk into spaces to inhabit a space that exists from the artist's mind and artist's representation of nature. So, you know, you have this in so many different interesting forms that it's coming to the fore. You know, VR technology is amazing. I don't personally look for it, but I appreciate it. I have a great appreciation for it. So, you know, my sort of general response is like, I want to be in nature, you know, like I don't want to be in my house in nature. I want to be out in nature. And, you know, I'm always interested in artists who are making interventions in the natural world rather than having a virtual recreation of the natural world for people to walk through. But, you know, I still honor those forms and I still honor those practices.
So I was fascinated. Jakob, at the end of my conversation, revealed that he's using the software for this very complex VR piece actually to take it in another direction, and that's theater. And in fact, Ed Atkins is doing the same. I mean, he creates a world that's more in the mind, but I think we'll see that happening. As you were mentioning, the Van Gogh world, the visitor can enter that brain of Van Gogh a little more in an entertainment way, but I think we'll see unusual things, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think now that the technology exists and we know that it can happen and people can do it, rather than the recreation, we'll see people really expressing original thoughts and original visual landscapes that we'll actually physically inhabit rather than virtually. Yeah.
Yeah. So now moving towards closing, this has been a wonderful conversation. And I have to say, it's been a true pleasure speaking with artists and a curator like yourself. You've helped to keep me sane and to keep me pushing forward with my own understanding of this particular period of the art world and the world in general. So I wonder, do you have any guesses or premonitions as to what the next chapter has in store for us curators and art lovers?
Oh my God, I don't. I'm excited to live it. I'm excited to see things unfold. I think we're at a precipice. It feels new. It feels so fresh. And, you know, I so deeply appreciate and admire you, Barbara, and to bring this series to the public's attention and allow artists to have a platform to speak in these types of conversations, or, you know, curators such as myself to have a platform to speak and share. I'm really excited about the future. I don't you know, being in the contemporary art, you're always writing history as it happens. I like to get to a particular vantage point and look back upon this time. But I know that it has been groundbreaking moments and it has been pivotal. There have been pivotal shifts in a kind of social and political psyche. And that cannot help but filter into the work that artists are doing because they're citizens of this world. And they use their creative expression sometimes to address or critique or to mirror where we are in society. And so I'm looking forward to getting to a vantage point to see what has transpired in this period of time.
So this has been wonderful. And I can't wait to see you in person, but I think I really appreciate your sharing your ideas. So thank you so much for joining me in the season finale of Barbara London Calling Season 2.0. And of course, I want to thank all of the artists who joined me along the way. And I want to thank everyone who's listening and everyone who's sharing their thoughts and passion for the conversations we've had. So despite the insanity we've all faced this year, it feels like, as you say, we've accomplished a lot. And I'm certain we're pointed in the right direction to do even more. So thank you, Valerie.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure spending this time with you, Barbara.
Support for Barbara London Calling 2.0 is generously provided by the Kramlich Art Foundation. The series is produced by Ryan Leahy and production assistant Vuk Vukovic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you can keep up to date with new episodes in the series. Follow us on Instagram at Barbara London Calling and check out my website, barbaralondon.net, for transcripts and links to the works discussed. Special thanks to Lee Rinaldo for graciously providing our music and to Independent Curators International for their help with the series. Thanks again for listening.
We'll see you next season.